Donald Trump met recently with 1,000 religious leaders, and one of those leaders is Kelly Shackelford. He joins us right now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to do it.
All right, before we set the table, just real fast, why would you, out of 1,000 different potential leaders that Donald Trump met with, why would he meet with you? Because you've got this wonderful work called First Liberty Institute. Tell us about that.
First Liberty Institute's the largest legal organization in the country that focuses exclusively on religious liberty in the United States. So all the religious liberty cases and things around the country, that's what we do. And so, you know, it was really a privilege to be asked to be on the steering committee of this group and actually ask the questions to Donald Trump about nominations to the Supreme Court and the federal courts and issues of religious freedom. And so that's why I was there, and happy to do so.
Now, a lot of people would be kind of skeptical about this. I mean, I have to admit, every time I think about when Donald Trump said on TV, I don't know, about 2 months ago or something, I'm such a good Christian, that's why the IRS keeps auditing me. It just sort of makes me laugh. I mean, you know, but on the other hand, I see he seems to be having an open-minded with Christians, especially evangelicals. So how about your comments?
Well, there's certainly a lot of evangelicals around him that I think are trying to influence him and his faith. I hope that occurs. But really the purpose of the meeting was mainly these are leaders from all over the country of national ministries, of organizations, of major churches. And most of those people, to be honest, were not supporters of Donald Trump. They supported either someone else.
Like Ted Cruz.
Like Ted Cruz or somebody. Or they weren't involved at all. But now it's down to two candidates. It's down to, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And so most of these people had never met Donald Trump, never been able to express to him what was on their heart, nor to hear where he was on these issues. So that was really the whole purpose of the meeting, was really just to open a conversation for people who never had met him.
I understand that Franklin Graham led the prayer. He was requested to pray, and he did a wonderful job.
He did. I think he set the atmosphere just right, too. He started out by talking about Moses and David and really all these Christian leaders in the Bible who had flaws. I mean, you know, David was a murderer. He was an adulterer. And it was just a way for Reverend Graham to say, we're all sinners, so let's start there and let's pray the Lord to lead us.
Okay. At the meeting, these are the names that I've at least partly come up with here. Michelle Bachmann was there. Ben Carson was there. Mike Huckabee. I guess he served as a moderator. Then there was also David Jeremiah, James Dobson, Tony Perkins, Sammy Rodriguez, Tim Wildman. And if there are other names, I don't know them. Can you rattle off some other names or just people that you saw? Because you were there.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of people. I mean, any of the major, national faith leaders were pretty much there. Whether it's Tony Perkins or Gary Bauer,
okay.
As you mentioned, Dr. Dobson. I mean, it was the folks that you would expect to be there. And, you know, that was one of the things, Jerry, that I really caused me to think. I looked around the room and I thought, you know, I've been doing religious liberty work for 27 years, and I've never seen all of these different faith leaders all come together for one thing. And I thought, why is this happening? And I really believe it's because there's a palpable concern amongst faith leaders in the country that religious freedom is under attack in our culture. And they're very concerned about the future of the country and especially, government and what government's been doing. And so they wanted to make sure if somebody's considering a possible, might be the possible president, they want to know, where do you stand on these issues? And they wanted to also be able to express some of the frustration that they felt over the past, number of years with all the new attacks by the federal government on religious freedom, whether you're the Little Sisters of the Poor or whether you're Hobby Lobby or whether you're a Christian college university. There's all kinds of things happening that didn't used to happen. And so that's why you have all these faith leaders who are very concerned because of the religious freedoms aspects.
All right, can I be really blunt with you? I remember one of the things that turned me off early on related to Donald Trump was when he was asked about Kim Davis, who was one of these persons who I think, you know, fell prey as a victim of the, you know, anti-religious freedom in our day. Gay rights trump religious freedom. It was religious freedom that helped found this country, not gay rights. And religious freedom and freedom for all, including gays, are welcome in this country and so forth. But it's not right to take religious freedom and, you know, stomp on that, you know, in order to promote gay rights. Okay, so I'll get off my soapbox. But he was asked, that is, Donald Trump was asked about, you know, Kim Davis going to jail. And he said, hey, you know, the Supreme Court has spoken and that's it. It's, you know, the end of the case. Oh, that bothered me about Donald Trump, because it's like, wait a minute now. You know, do we believe in judicial supremacy? The Supreme Court just makes their decisions, have no basis in the law, no basis in the Constitution, no basis in history, no basis in biology. But other than that, you know, it's like, you know, one of the dissenters said, five unelected lawyers making their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that troubled me about Donald Trump. Your comment?
Yeah, well, number one, I think Donald Trump clearly is, all these issues are new to him. Somewhat. I mean, he hasn't been in politics, and so, you know, he said plenty of things that many of us disagree with, that included. I would point out that one of the things he did, again, unprompted by anybody, when he saw what happened to that coach, the football coach who was fired for going to his knee and giving thanks after the football game, he immediately tweeted. He's spoken out on that numerous times. And that's one of our clients, actually. It's Coach Joe Kennedy.
Yeah.
So I appreciated his instincts there on what you're talking about. I think, you know, he needed more education. And I asked him, one of the questions I asked him was about that very type of conflict. And, you know, which is, there's some people that want to elevate LGBT rights above the Constitution and above religious freedom, which is in the Constitution. And I asked him, you know, really, how as president he would stand on that. And his answer was, you know, really that's going to be decided by judges. And he promised not only to appoint pro-life judges, which I've never heard any presidential candidate say, but he said, because they usually will use terminology like, you know, strict constructionist or, you know, original intent, but they won't say my judges will be pro-life. He said that. And then he followed that by saying, you know, they're going to be conservative. And he said, you know, when we said, well, how are you going to know they're going to be conservative? Where are you going? What process are you going to have for picking these judges and justices? Maybe three, maybe four, maybe five on the U.S. Supreme Court. His answer was that the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation was a major place he was going to go.
He's heard of those groups?
They got the most conservative judges.
He's heard of those groups? That's encouraging.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing. Now, again, 4 months ago, what would he have said? I don't know. But if he's moving to that direction, that's a commitment he's made. He's even released the names of 11 of the judges that he would choose from to replace Justice Scalia. And these are all pretty well-known conservative judges.
Yes.
So that, you know, that's something that I think people are very interested in. He announced yesterday to us that he was going to add four or five more to that list, more conservative judges to pick from. So it's something that, you know, I think it's very smart on his behalf. You know, maybe that's not an important issue to him, but boy, to, you know, all the social conservatives, the you know, faith leaders, the, you know, people who care about the Second Amendment. I mean, you hit a lot of people when you talk about making sure you get the court right and we don't have these judicial activism. As you referenced earlier, where judges and justices are making up things that aren't the Constitution.
Okay, now you said earlier you've been working for religious freedom for 27 years. Do you think that, and this could almost sound like an overstatement, that the next election could determine whether America remains free as far as religious freedom, or that it could really go down the tubes much further than it has?
I think it very well might be. And it's not, again, because of the presidency and the policies of the president, it's because of the court. We're at a place now where we have four liberals, four conservatives, and one who kind of flips back and forth on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, wait, no. That's one of those conservatives, right?
That's right. And And one of those conservatives, one of those four conservatives, it was 4-4-1. One of those conservatives was Justice Scalia, and he passed away.
Yeah. Oh, so I see.
We're really sitting at three conservatives, four liberals, and one who kind of flips back and forth to conservative and moderate.
Anthony Kennedy.
The next justice is going to decide, just the next one alone,
yeah,
is going to decide the court. And most likely, when you look at the ages and health of the justices, you're probably going to have, I think on average, two more in the next term. So you're probably going to have three justices. So I think the next president is going to maybe set the court for the next 20 years. Wow. And, you know, there's a lot of things that people take for granted. I mean, you know, if you – that will determine, for instance, do you have a right to own a firearm? Does the Second Amendment apply to your right to own a firearm? That'll be decided one way or the other. You know, do you have a right to have religious displays in public? You know, the issue of marriage, which was just 5-4 last year, defining marriage to be same-sex marriage, while that there's no, it's nowhere in the Constitution, of course. And even things like using that decision from last year as a weapon to attack people of faith who believe in marriage as a man and a woman, or is that going to be protected as religious freedom? That all those things and many, many more are going to be decided by who's appointed to that court, and it's going to, I think, be really set solidly one direction or the other by the next president. Probably it'll be in place at least 20 years before that composition will change again.
Wow. And what's interesting, too, about that is it's not only the presidency. The Senate, of course, is extremely important.
That's
right. Because the senators will decide if a judge will sit or not sit. You know, you mentioned Anthony Kennedy, the one who flip-flops. So he, one day he's a conservative, the next day he's a liberal. I guess it depends on what he ate for breakfast. But, you know, he replaced, frankly, Robert Bork, who was lied about. And the left pulled out all the stops and, you know, made Bork out to be the worst living American ever. And, you know, but Robert Bork should have sat on that court. The man used to teach at Yale Law School. Oxford, I have this gigantic Oxford companion to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they said something like Robert Bork was the most qualified justice to be appointed in half a century, and then his character was vilified.
Yes, it's very important. I mean, you know, look, I haven't endorsed anybody for president. I'm not telling people who to vote for, but you know, I do think people need to think through some of these things. I mean, I'm not saying this would happen, but it's very conceivable that Donald Trump, who is certainly not considered a right-wing conservative, it's very, very possible that Donald Trump as president would appoint a more conservative Supreme Court than, for instance, Mitt Romney would ever think about.
Hmm.
Because Mitt Romney would appoint people more moderate like himself, you know, moderate conservative. Donald Trump is going to sort of pass this off to like the Federal Society and the Heritage Foundation, which are very conservative. So it's one of those things where sometimes you can look at a candidate and go, well, he's not as conservative as I am. But really what you're asking is, what are they going to do as president? What are their positions are going to be? And it could be that if your issue is the courts, then, you know, Trump could be very different than you would normally assume because he's delegating this away from himself, and the results might be more, you know, more appetizing to people who are very conservative.
All right, last question, unless there's anything else you want to add, and that is what does all this mean then for those conservatives who are holding out saying, you know, never Trump?
Well, I've never been agreeing with never anybody. I think you've always got to compare who the choices are. For instance, for the people that say never Trump, what if Ted Cruz was picked as his VP? You know, what if somebody, whoever they really liked, what if Trump picked them as the VP? I would imagine they would stop being never Trump. So I think it's always, I think as believers, we've got to vote. That's a stewardship responsibility. We have the ability. God gave us, you know, truth, and we understand, you know, right from wrong. We understand what the Bible says. We need to apply that to the best of our ability and be good stewards with that. And understanding that, we might have elections and different elections where, you know, maybe they're two bad choices that people think, but you know, they're always two sinners. So we just need to do the best we can, think through what do we think are the most important issues that the Lord would say are the most important issues, and how can we be faithful to picking the person that gets us closest to those issues and do the best with what we've got. I mean, that's, we live in a fallen world, and that's the best we can do. And so I would highly encourage everybody needs to vote. This idea that, well, not idea, the truth that over 40% of Bible-believing Christians in the last election 4 years ago, you know, for president, did not vote. That's just really inexcusable. And you change a small percentage of that 40, over 40%, and you change all kinds of seats across the country in the kind of moral positions that those elected officials hold.
Excellent points. Okay, your website is firstliberty.org. Kelly Shackelford, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Happy to do it.
God bless. Bye-bye.